Good to be here. It's funny, once you finally get here, you just, you're finally here. And I understand why some maybe call their main assembly room, they call it the sanctuary. I believe that's a misnomer. The sanctuary is just being amongst believers, and just to come out from the world and just be amongst you all, it's just, you breathe a sigh of relief. We're in the book of Job. We may or may not get through chapter 3. It's a the digger you deep, the more, or the deeper you dig, the more things that you draw from it. And as the blonde lady says, it's like a rabbit hole. I've been going down rabbit holes and following them around, and she gave me a whole lot to ponder this morning. We left Job at the end of chapter 2, and his friends have come together, and they've joined him. But just before that, there's an interaction here with Job and his wife. And just some more things to possibly ponder that this conversation between Job and his wife might be close and privileged information that those of us who are married share with our spouses. Those of us who are married, and if you're not married yet, you'll understand, there are things that you confide with your spouse that no one in the world would ever or should ever hear, and you would respect that intimacy. And this might be what's happening here. But again, as we noted before, Job did not react in anger to her or to God or anything about that. His response, it's a very 1 Peter 3:10 response, dealing with your spouse in an understanding manner. And that's what Job does, in that he does not lash out at her, but he relates to her and understands. And his response to her, whenever she says, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks." Sounds to me like this is out of her character. Job says, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept the good from God and not accept adversity? And in all this, Job did not sin with his lips." Job did not do as the image that you see before you. And then last week we wrangled a little bit with the word integrity. I was trying to get a deeper understanding of it. And in our quest for dealing with words, or maybe my misunderstanding of words, or trying to understand, let's not doubt for a moment. We have all that God wants us to know about this book. God has given us this. And I give him the glory also for us having it so readily available. I give him the glory for it, for even it being in our language. And I can see the assault that history has made upon the scriptures, and I see what God has done to preserve it. So let's not doubt for a moment that we are seeing the words of the Spirit. And maybe in our quest to understand what the original language may have been, we have all that God wants us to know about that. And that should make us deeply blessed. It also should make us feel a little bit obligated. Here we have this oldest book in this book that's been preserved over the generations and millennia. Why has it been preserved for us? And why is it here? And we give God the glory for it, and we dig and strive to dig deeper and to understand. We leave Job with his friends. Well, this is not working. My printout's on the printer upstairs. At the top of the stairs, turn left. There it is. At the house. Another note. One of the elders at East Shelby, a congregation where I used to worship in Memphis, brought this up. It seems odd that when Satan struck Job at first, he struck him, his wealth, all his children. You'd think he would have smote his wife first. If someone wanted to get at me, or possibly you, that's the first thing they would want to take. And that elder pointed out, well, you know, when God asked for Job and said, "Have you considered him?" And Satan says that, yeah, you build a hedge about him. And so God says, "You can strike him. Do not touch his flesh." And when man and woman are joined together, they become one flesh. That might be why God did not strike his wife, because they are considered as one flesh in the eyes of God. One thing I know, if Satan had allowed, or Satan had struck Job's wife, and that was more than Job could bear, if that was a temptation beyond that which he could bear, that was not going to happen, because God does not let that happen to us. He always gives us a mean, and he never tempts us beyond that which we can endure. So we leave Job with his friends, and they all come together from various different parts, and they find him sitting in ashes, in just a very sad state. And he was in such a sad state that they did not even recognize him. They raised their voices, they wept, they threw dust over their heads, a mourning, a ritual that we do not have in our culture, that we maybe do not understand. And then they joined Job, and they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights with no one speaking a word to him. Now, this might very well be a form of mourning known as, what's the word? Shiva. In Jewish culture, the word Shiva, this predates Jewish cultures. This predates the law of Moses. So it might be a form of mourning that was done. And then I was thinking that this period of time here is actually elapsed because news travels at the speed of camel. It would have taken a while for Job's friends to hear the news, assemble, come together, travel, and get there. And if he was mourning for a period of 30 days, and there's a period of mourning where you sit silent and low to the ground or possibly on the ground for 7 days of that 30, for the first seven of that 30, and I thought, well, it can't be that because it's only 7 days that we're talking to. How many children did Job have? He had 10. So if he were to observe the ancient tradition of mourning for the dead, this would be something that would be going on for a long time. And also in his state that he is, he's just very, very sad. And for lack of a better word, it's just pathetic. It's just very moving, so moving that they could sit with him for 7 days and not say a word because they saw that his pain was very great. In this ritual of mourning, this ancient ritual, it was also forbidden for them to speak. I don't want to say forbidden, but it was the cultural norm, and also people did not speak to them. Is that correct? So some folks who comment on these things and know much more about this than I have suggested that this would be like or predating Shiva. We looked at our outline of the whole book. In chapter 3, here's where you are. We're just before Job's defenses, right after his immediate distress. And Job, after this period of silence, he begins to speak. I'm going to be reading from Job chapter 3. Afterward, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. And Job said, "Let the day perish on which I was to be born, and the night which said, 'A boy is conceived.' May that day be darkness. Let not God above care for it, nor let light shine on it. Let darkness and black gloom claim it. Let a cloud settle on it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize it. Let it not rejoice among the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. Behold, let that night be barren. Let no joyful shout enter it. Let those curse it who curse the day, who are prepared to rouse Leviathan. Let the stars of its twilight be darkened. Let it wait for the light, but have none. Neither let it see the breaking dawn. Because it did not shut the opening of my mother's womb or hide trouble from my eyes." Verse 11. Why did I not die at birth, come forth from the womb and expire? Why did the knees receive me, and why did the breast that I should suck? For now I would have lain down and been quiet. I would have slept with them. I would have been at rest with kings and with counselors of the earth who rebuilt ruin for themselves, or princes who had gold, who were filling their houses with silver. Or like a miscarriage which is discarded, I would not be. As infants that never saw the light, there the wicked cease from raging, and there the weary are at rest. The prisoners are at ease together. They do not hear the voice of the taskmaster. The small and the great are there, and the slave is free from his master. Why is light given to him who suffers, and life to the bitter of soul, who long for death, but there is none, and dig for it more than for hidden treasures, who rejoice greatly, they exult when they find the grave? Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden and whom God has hedged in? For my groaning comes at the sight of my food, and my cries pour out like water. For what I fear comes upon me, and what I dread befalls me. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I am not at rest, but turmoil comes. This chapter is divided into three parts. And maybe you caught the distinct parts as we read them. The first part is the cursing of the day. And the second part would be 11 through 19, and that was Job asking a rhetorical question. Why am I born? Why am I here? And in the third part, at the end, from 20 to the end, why am I forced to live when I want to die? Job is asking, why can't I die? Why, if someone wants to die, why would they not be allowed to do that? As we read this, well, sometimes I feel like a kid in sixth grade reading Shakespeare. And what I always said is, who talks like this? Well, I guess they did kind of back then. And I want to ask now, who talks like this? Did Job actually construct this entire poetic form while he was speaking? And I think there's two ways we can look at this. It's possible that Job spoke all these ideas, and it was properly organized and poeticized by the Holy Spirit through the person that actually penned this. It's still inspired. It's still the words of the Spirit. It's still God telling us all that he wants us to know about this in a form designed and pleasing to God in this poetic form. Or it may very well be that, since Job is a patriarch, and how did God communicate with the patriarchs? Not through a priesthood, not through written word. He communicated through them directly. Holy men of God were moved by the Holy Spirit. It very well might be that the Spirit of God is speaking again through Job. And this happens throughout scriptures. The first thing that comes to mind, believe it or not, is Saul. Yeah, the ornery King Saul. Remember him? In 1 Samuel 10, and in verse 9, Samuel anoints Saul as a king. Now, this is not the Saul we normally think of, the very ornery and distressed and mentally distraught king. This is not the Saul that we see that's trying to kill David out of his jealousy and rage. This is not the Saul who is big in his eyes. This is the Saul that is small in his own eyes. And it happened when he turned back to leave Samuel that God changed his heart. And all those signs came upon him that day. And when they came to the hill there, behold, a group of prophets met him. And the Spirit of God came upon Saul mightily so that he prophesied among them. And it came about that when all knew him previously, saw he prophesied, or how he prophesied with the prophets, that the people said to one another, "What has happened to the son of Kish? Is Saul also among the prophets?" Now there was a man answered and said, "Now who is their father?" Therefore it came a proverb, "Is Saul also among the prophets?" So God is now working through Saul and working with his mouth and his lips. He is able to prophesy with the prophets. It may very well be in this state and in this instance, that is what is going on. Afterward, verse 1, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. That's the thesis of this paragraph here. If we don't know what it means, we're going to find out. And Job said, "Let the day perish on which I was to be born, and the night which said, a boy is conceived." Nights do not speak, do they? That's not K-N-I-G-H-T, that's a night. So as soon as we get to something like that, that makes no sense literally, correct? So as soon as we see this, we know, okay, this is now figurative language. This is now the poetic form. We can now understand the lens in which we can absorb all this. Job is not shaking his fist at God. Job is not cursing God. But what he's saying is, let the day that I was born be struck off the calendar. Imagine a calendar where today is, there's no number on it. It's not even there. It's not a Wednesday. It's a no day. It's a nothing day. And that's what he's referring to when he talks about the awfulness of the day in which even he was conceived. So he talks about the day of his birth. He talks about his conception. Again, it's very poetic. Now, the term cursed, I never quite understood this. You said that the idea of cursing something means to be put away or to what? Antithetical.
Well, I didn't say it right, but word, which means the opposite of.
The opposite of a blessing would be to leave or take leave of.
Well, that word actually means blessing. So, but that form of it in this context is
the opposite of that. In other words, to
take leave of.
So it'd be better that day did not exist. Put that day away. Marvelous.
That's a different word. That's really cursed.
Okay. So this is the actual cursing of the day. So in other words, bad things happen to the actual day, not to the people who are living in it, but the actual day. It's a poetic way of just saying, woe is me. Are we all in agreement with that? Can anyone add to this? I'm floundering here on this one. Who talks like this? I don't quite understand it, but still, it's vivid in the picture that it's trying to portray here. Someone who's so sad that they would say, you know, let that day that's on the calendar in which I was conceived or born, let it be just smitten off the calendar.
Tom, the way I see it, he's had a lot of time to think about it.
Yes, that's true. Yes, on top of his bodily pain, the grief that he'd already experienced before. And
yeah, and I suspect for Job, it wasn't the boils aren't the problem. I mean, the problem, probably, I would assume, came a long time before he felt the physical pain. I imagine what's crushing him was the loss of his family, essentially.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. But then again, it's hard to even mourn correctly when you're in pain. If you've ever had a toothache, you can't do anything right while that toothache is getting to you. It's just there. It just ruins your whole day. While what Job is going through is just immense. Yes.
I don't mean to downplay this or make it, an irreverent comparison. But I'm reminded of "It's a Wonderful Life" when he says, "It'd be better if I was never even born."
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what Job's saying. He's not saying it in those exact words, but he's saying it would be better if I was never even born.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I think that's like you were saying, like, it's not about the boils, like Andrew was saying, it's not about the boils. That is a reflection of everyone that suffered because of him.
Mm-hmm.
It would be better if he were never born, because that suffering would never have happened to all those other people.
And in that character, in the movie, that's what he is grieving about, is right. Because he's thinking, and he's not seeing all that. So yeah, this is what it is leading to. First he curses the day, and next is, in our next section, asking, why was I even born? Because of all the things that have happened to him and others. Why did I not die at birth? There's something I kind of gleaned from reading through chapter 3. There is a general worldview of the way things that really are in the eyes of God regarding life, birth, and conception, and glorifying him. That's mentioned in this section. The idea that a miscarried child is at rest. The idea that a stillborn child is now at rest and numbered with kings and counselors of the world. This is different from the worldview that says that a child is what it is based on the decision of the one who is carrying it. In other words, that a mom can decide whether her child is a baby in her or an unviable mass of tissue based on her decision. This is we're starting to see these are words that are chosen by God of the Spirit. When we read this, we know how God thinks about these very deep things. And of course, our goal in life is to move our minds and our thoughts toward what God is. Why did I not die at birth, come from forth from the womb, and expire? Why did the knees receive me, and why the breasts that I should give suck? Again, why was I even born? And we still ask this question, if it's not of ourselves. Most of us have had lives that are not this tragic. But when we see a child, and we know someone within the church who just had a child born, and this child is probably not going to make it, and what else? You got to ask, why was this child brought here, and then now we're going to lose this child? And then somehow we've got to understand that we all exist, in spite of the rhetorical questions, we all exist to glorify God. Why I came into this world, I'm here to glorify God. And perhaps we need to remind our children of that. Why am I here? Why am I doing this? Why do I have to do this? We're here to glorify God. Those gas giants on the other side of Mars that are weird and big storms and whipping around the sun in slow motion, why are they there? They're here to glorify God. And they show us his glory as well. And that's what we are to do in the body itself. And as we see all the wonders of nature, they exist to glorify God, and they do what they do as an evidence of his glory itself. Verse 13, if I had not been born, or if I had been stillborn, for now I would have lain down and been quiet, I would have slept then, I would have been at rest. In contrast to what Job is in the state he is right now. But had he not been born or been stillborn, then he would have been at rest, verse 14, with kings, with counselors of the earth who rebuilt ruins for themselves, or with princes who had gold, who were filling their houses with silver. What's he saying? That everyone who becomes a great prince and builds great pyramids is automatically in heaven? No, I think what he's doing is drawing the picture that the stillborn child is with those in a right relationship with God, great and small. Y'all in agreement with that? Because those who are in a relationship with God, whether they are great or whether they are small, they're in a relationship with God. And they are as the same as with them. And notice what we are to strive to do here on this side of eternity within God's kingdom. We are to do that also. There's not to be great among us. There's not to be the loathsome among us or those who would be to be debased. That's not to exist within God's kingdom. Or like one who is not born, verse 16, like a miscarriage, discarded, I would not be. So a miscarriage which is discarded, he would not be. He would be as an infant that never saw light. And when you do not see light, verse 17, the wicked cease from raging. You're at rest. Prisoners are at ease together. They do not hear the voice of the taskmaster. Small and greater there, the slave is free from his master. Again, the picture is painted there from which we can see that in the eyes of God, outside of the body, we are with him and we are in a state where there is no small, there is no great, there is no enslavement, there is no oppression. Am I right there? Am I off track on this? Am I trying to get too much out of this?
I'm wondering back with the kings and all, too. So I'm saying their struggles and their labors are behind them. These great men that have gone through these struggles, that's over and it's behind them. And my struggles and whatever I'm facing here would be over also as a possibility.
Okay. Because kings and counselors of the earth do busy and trouble themselves with rebuilding ruins for themselves.
Yeah, just the struggles, all the struggles that bring with it. Just a thought, you know, to go along with that. And you mentioned earlier, it's interesting at the end of verse 16, as infants that never saw light, again, their children, as you mentioned.
Yeah, they're an infant.
So here's that term that brings that to focus that you were bringing up.
But in the false stratification that we, unfortunately, as human beings, paint among ourselves on this side of eternity, does that not cover the gambit from a miscarried infant, too young to even be born, to a king and a prince building ruins for themselves? Does that cover the whole spectrum? Again, in verse 19, it's wrapped up with that. The small and the great are there, and the slave is free from his master. Verse 20. And this is another question that maybe we have had on this side of eternity. Why can't I die? Why can I not have death? Because there are points in your life whenever you believe that death would be a relief. For those who have no eternal perspective, for those who do not have a faith or an insight or a general knowledge that there is more than just the physical realm on which we are living, they may see death as being a relief. They're wrong. And it's sad when you see that. When you have no eternal perspective and you have no concept of that which is so much better, then you have, your worldview is just on this side of eternity. And if you perceive this as being hopeless, if you see there's nothing more to this life than just the here and now, then what does it matter if I die at the age of 25 or if I die at the age of 105? And so that perspective will just skew your thinking. If you believe there's nothing more than this, then it doesn't really matter in that once I'm gone, I'm just gone. I do not exist. So why not go out in a blaze of glory? And that's what we're struggling with in our country, in our era right now, in that we've got people who want to make headlines or make a name for themselves by doing horrible, destructive things. And if they die at the hands of the SWAT team, so be it. They go out in a blaze of glory and people will remember them. And that is so sad whenever all you need is God to know your name. Yes?
Numbers 11, the Moses, he felt somewhat like Job because he was responsible for all the Israelites. And that's where they were all crying to him. I think it was Numbers 11. hours, all this waiting to die. But imagine all these people pointing to you and blaming you. So Moses said, if you dealt with me this way, God, I'd rather die. And he was talking about, I didn't give birth to all these people. Why am I responsible for all these people? And that's when God gave him the wisdom told him to choose 70 people, elderly people that respected and delegate. And Moses was then relieved. And so a lot of times we are in despair, and it seems that it's not going to get any better. We try to might as well just say it's up, instead of prolonging the inevitable.
This is the same Moses who, on behalf of the people, went before God and said, do not take their life. Take mine instead. And here he is. I'm alone, not able to take care of these complaining people. It's too burdensome for me. Numbers 11:15. So if thou art going to deal thus with me, please kill me at once, for I have found favor in thy sight. Do not let me see my wretchedness. That's how distraught these people had made him to be dealing with that many distraught people and the complaining. It brought him down to that state. Thank you for that. Yes.
Tom.
Yes.
Don't want to get ahead. You may bring this up, but there's no hint of suicide, or euthanasia, or those things that are so popular in our vocabulary. And in all of this misery, that's not even remotely consideration.
That's not even there. When you understand that you're here to glorify God, and there is something that God has reserved for you, then that option is not an option, does not exist. And never in Job's bereavement does he even say that I'm going to kill myself, I'm going to end my life. It's not there, because he still recognizes that God is on the throne. And even though Job is going to get some enlightenment about just how sovereign God is, he still does not use that as an option. He's not asking for someone to take his life or anything like that. And of course, Saul again. That's the way he ended his life. He wanted his arm. He had his armor bearer steady the sword so he could fall on it. If I remember right. Why is light, verse 20, given to him who suffers, and life to the bitter of soul, who long for death but there is none, and dig for it more than hidden treasures? Imagine the mind of a prospector when you're digging for gold. You've got a desire to find this treasure. And you go at it with some determination. And the idea that someone would long for death like a miner would look for a treasure, or like an explorer would look for something new. This is how Job is expressing his desire to just go ahead and die. But why do I continue on whenever I long to die? And again, our days are not for us to choose. It is God who has our days numbered. It is God who's going to determine that and protect that. And he does protect that. And I know so. I've done some things that should have shortened that period of days. And I'll give God the glory for it, because I'm still here. Because I, like all, are here to glorify God. Imagine, verse 22, rejoicing greatly when you find out you're going to die. Who rejoices greatly when they see their grave and a tombstone with their name on it? There's my name on a tombstone, it's open, and I'm going in there. That's the picture that Job paints here. But that's how much sorrow he is in. Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? Now again, there's that hedging of God. The idea that our life days are numbered, and God is aware of that, and God hedges that, What's the word we use for that? When God is protecting us and providing for us, do we not call that his providence? And of course, I've got a grip on that. I understand everything about that. If you have any question about that, come see me. I don't think any of us can understand God's providence. And I've always had this picture in my mind. The 3, 4, 5-year-old is oblivious of all that their parents are doing for them. They're just totally oblivious. They do not know the many times that they've been saved from themselves or saved from actual death or cared for in a way that would prevent death. And I think that might be where we're going to be on the other side of eternity, in that the 3, 4, 5-year-old, once they get older and they get to where they can understand their world is bigger than themselves, and then they realize all that their mom and dad has done for them, that's called maturity. And I think maybe on the other side of eternity, we're going to have a wave of understanding of all that God has done for us, for which we were just totally oblivious. I don't think we have a clue of all that God is doing for us. I mean, he made things, and through his Son, all things exist and they hold together. And we got a grip on that, don't we? We all understand that? No, we don't. Sometimes we think we do, and we do not. Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden and God is hedged in? For my groaning comes at the sight of my food, and my cries pour out like water. It's a difficult state when the thing that keeps you alive is required, but it causes pain. And we understand that people at the end of their life just stop eating. They cannot do it anymore. And I understand that. And I have memories of my mom, we'd set a plate of food in front of her and be a full plate of food. She just break down and cry like a little girl. 20 minutes later, the plate's clean as can be. But she would just cry about that because she didn't want to eat. But it's hard to imagine that. People with, from what I've heard and read, the idea of stomach cancers are just horrid because that which keeps you alive is now causing just tremendous pain. And that's the state that Job seems to be in. My groaning comes at the sight of my food. My cries pour out like water. For what I fear comes upon me, and what I dread befalls me. I do not understand this. What is Job fearing here specifically? I mean, he's got all kinds of things that have happened to him. What is he saying that he is afraid of? What is it that is he dreading? Are we still talking about food? Any help or insight on this?
Mm-hmm. But things are have come upon him that were beyond his imagination almost before. So it's one dread. It's just a thought.
And maybe it has to do with the fact that he feels like God has left him. You know, and I would be afraid of. I mean, that's something I don't want to ever happen, is for God to leave me.
Sure. If you think God has left you, you are going to wonder and walk what's next without his protection. But for whatever it is, whatever I fear comes upon me and what I dread befalls me, it could just be just another boil.
I was going to say, because I think it is maybe the physical things. He's, you know, in some ways when I look at him dreading or cursing the day he was born, he's back to that state of being that naked baby. Because
yes, keep in Yeah, keep in mind what Job's actual state is right now. He's going to have a limited amount of clothing because of his condition. He shaved his head, and he is very much naked like a newborn and in that state of just, what can you do to help him?
Is that last line? Because he's not in.
there's no rest. And to me, that comes from physical pain. I mean, I've had this stuff going on in my mouth, and I've had nights of no sleep, none, period, at all. And I've got one malaria.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even imagine Job's, you know, my Bible kind of went through the list of his complaints and then came up with the physical afflictions that would go with those complaints. And it's awful. I mean, there's not a part on his body.
We may address that next week. We have people coming in. The actual, the effects, as written by Job, that the symptoms that he's having, later on in his soliloquies, he talks about all the different things that's going on with him, and it's very profound. Pardon me?
His body.
Yeah, his actual body, his physical body. And once you put them all together, you realize what's going on in his life, and it's just very moving. But we'll do that next week, and I believe we're going to... We're going to get into four. I'm going to try to get a little farther next week. And so read a little farther than just one chapter. Read several chapters, if you would, beginning at next four for next week. And we may even talk about this Leviathan thing. No, it's not this giant laptop sitting up here. It's something else.